My friends at MyPillow, my buddy Mike Lindell, told me he was coming out with a brand new product. It's called the new mattress topper. So I got the new mattress topper immediately, and I've been sleeping on it now for a couple of months. It's the best thing you've ever felt in your life. Now, you literally have MyPillow foam for support. It's a transitional foam that helps relieve pressure points, and it's ultra-soft, patented temperature-regulating cover. And I got to tell you, it has a 10-year warranty, a cover that's washable and dryable. It's made in the USA, backed by their 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee. Once you try this new mattress topper, you put it right over your mattress, you will never sleep better. And right now, you, my radio listeners, you're going to save 30% off when you go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code TOPPER. And by the way, Mike will also give you two standard MyPillows absolutely free. All right, so try MyPillow.com, promo code TOPPER. Promo code TOPPER for this great deal and the best night's sleep you ever had. All right, glad you're with us, and hope you had a wonderful, great Thanksgiving. So much to be thankful for, living in the greatest, freest, best country God gave man, and it's still a constitutional republic. We still have, supposedly, the rule of law. Supposedly, we're supposed to have equal justice under the law, equal application of our laws. At times, sadly, I begin to doubt if a lot of that is true. It's frustrating. Anyway, there's good news on the economy. We'll hit that today. We've got John Roberts' wholly inappropriate comments and double standard when it comes to criticizing presidents. Clearly, he had no problem with, you know, there are Obama justices. Every president picks a justice based on their judicial philosophy. You can pretty much be certain that there's not going to be a lot of times that Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor are going to be voting with Sam Alito and Clarence Thomas and Justice Kavanaugh and others. It's a simple, basic, fundamental truth. But Justice Roberts, Chief Justice, never really seemed to care when Obama ripped the Supreme Court. That was on the decision about with Dave Bossie's group. And by the way, Dave Bossie will check in with us today. And Citizens United decision. And I remember Sam Alito said, not true. He mouthed the words, not true, what the president was claiming. But the president was excoriating them in front of the whole country. Did it again in 2012 in a lot of ways. And nobody seemed to care. And what the president said about the Ninth Circuit is absolutely true. What do we talk about a lot on this program? About people that go judge shopping. In other words, they'll pick a liberal jurisdiction with liberal judges, knowing on appeal if it gets to the Ninth Circuit, they're going to get the decision they want, they favor. That's why lawsuits are strategically placed. And that the Ninth Circuit, even though they're overturned 80% of the time, it doesn't matter. It just makes the process go on longer and longer. By the way, we have one more Senate race. We had a vote in Mississippi tomorrow. And look, this is the difference between 53-47 for the U.S. Senate being Republican or 52-48. And that three-vote margin is going to make a big difference, especially when it comes to Supreme Court nominees. I hope the people in Mississippi understand how big this is. Now, the president is headed there even now as we speak. He's got, I think, stops in Tupelo and Biloxi. And right now, if you look at the different polling, you know, I'm looking at anywhere between a 5-10 point favorite. But you never know because it's like a special election. Most people think the election's over. Anyway, but Hyde Smith is up by Espy. Espy is going to be a Schumer liberal. It's not any more complicated than that. And Hyde Smith, the Republican, has supported the president in his agenda. The president's on his way to point out the important differences between the two differing parties and what a big difference 53-47 makes over 52-48. It's just simple math at this point. It gives some breathing room in the Senate for the president for his agenda, if he needs it, especially with appointments. Look, we know that there's going to be, the president needs a new attorney general. The president's going to have new cabinet members that are going to need the approval of the Senate. Possible Supreme Court justice openings, other court openings. This is a big deal. Mississippi, it's in play. That's what I would say. Look, the big deal is I'm watching all weekend, and if you go back before the election, what did we, President Obama mocking, laughing, ridiculing the amount of criticism that was leveled at people like myself, Fox News, the president, others, conservatives. When we saw what happened down at the border in South Mexico, southern Mexico, where you have the caravan literally knocking down fences and just rushing the border, well, now it happened to a smaller extent because a lot of this caravan has not made it to the border. It happened to a smaller extent this weekend, and there are thousands more still on the way. Now, Mexico caused all of this problem because they didn't. By the way, why, if it's about asylum, Mexico actually offered opportunities for the migrants to work and to seek asylum in South Mexico, and very few people took them up on it. Why didn't they, if it was asylum that they're seeking? Well, now the president is vowing to keep asylum seekers in Mexico. I'm sure there's going to be plenty of court decisions, but I'm more concerned about all the reports from this weekend. Let me play for you Rodney Scott. He's chief Border Patrol agent for the San Diego sector, and he says that they were throwing rocks and debris at Border Patrol agents and that tear gas needed to be used so that these agents, you know, the ones that ICE agents, for example, that Kamala Harris was saying, well, you know, there's a perception out there when she was interviewing the head of ICE that ICE is, you know, like the Klan. The amount of things that have been said, which I'll get to in the course of this program about this border situation. Look, it's simple. Do you believe America has American sovereignty first? Do you believe, as a constitutional republic, we get to pass laws based on the people that we elect to office? Do you believe in borders? Do you believe we have a right to protect our borders? Now, both Mexican officials, our own Department of Homeland Security, have both stated unequivocally that at least 500 criminals have been identified as having infiltrated and infuse themselves, if you will, into the caravan population. That's 500 that we know of. Maybe others. We don't know. I've often cited the sit-down I had and the briefing, security briefing I had with Rick Perry, and I've been down to the border 13 times. I won't reiterate that point. I've seen it all up close and personal. And in Texas, 642,000 crimes committed against Texans in a seven-year period. Now, some of them were minor, many of them were, but there was also murder. There's also drug traffickers. There's also other serious violent crimes that are taking place. We had a teacher that was killed this weekend, and sadly, it was killed by an illegal immigrant who apparently had already been arrested and then let go on a violent charge, knowing that is illegal. At some point, does the government bear the responsibility when this happens? I mean, the whole issue of catch and release is like, okay, we'll seek asylum. You get a court date. We let you free in America for you to just never show up back to court. And then, you know, calls for amnesty begin. Anyway, here's the chief Border Patrol agent for the San Diego sector describing what happened this weekend.
Explain the decision to use the tear gas, because that is one question I think people have this morning.
So one of our primary missions is to make sure that we keep the border safe and secure. I kind of challenge that this was a peaceful protest or that the majority of these people were claiming asylum. We ended up making about 42 arrests. Only 8 of those were females, and there were only a few children involved. The vast majority of the people we're dealing with are adult males. Similar to what we saw the first wave of the caravan that came up about a week or so ago, the group immediately started throwing rocks and debris at our agents, taunting the agents. Once our agents were assaulted and the numbers started growing, we had, you know, 2 or 3 agents at a time initially facing hundreds of people at a time. They deployed tear gas to protect themselves and to protect the border.
Were any of your agents hurt?
So at least three agents were actually struck by rocks, but they were in tactical gear. So their helmets and their shields and their bulletproof vest actually protected them from the rocks. We did have a few vehicles that were damaged, some windows and quite a few dents, but none of the agents were seriously injured.
I mean, this is now a threat to Border Patrol agents, and it's probably only going to get worse. And the fascinating thing is Tijuana, Mexico, they are now, you know, in the middle of all of this because Mexico, the Mexican government never did their job. And yeah, literally the mayor claiming Trump was right. This is an invasion. And I don't hear people screaming about what he had to say. What? How do we possibly, you open the borders, this is the dangerous part. If you have thousands of people charging the borders and hurling rocks and debris at our border agents, it is extraordinarily dangerous. Another Border Patrol chief, Carla Provost, actually said our agents are being assaulted. A large group rushed the area. They were throwing rocks and bottles at my men and my women, putting them in harm's way. And then she goes on to say about Border Patrol, it's made clear that a wall is needed to secure the border. The border agents don't want this. No border agent wants to go to work and have rocks and bottles thrown at them. And they have laws that they've got to enforce. But yet they're not getting the support in Congress. There's a Daily Caller piece out. Interesting. Democrats hammering Donald Trump for using tear gas to deter what happened this weekend. But U.S. and Mexico border agents, you know, by deploying tear gas after they were first attacked. And you have one Democratic senator from Hawaii, you know, deleting a tweet that compared the tear gas literally to chemical weapons, but later accused Border Patrol specifically of spraying children with gas. Well, Border Patrol, we now know Ben Rhodes, former top Obama aide, suggested that the use of tear gas on the border is immoral. Interesting side note, according to the Daily Caller, as they criticize the Trump administration, ignores the fact that Obama used similar tactics to deter migrants in 2013. We have a San Diego Union Tribune report, a group of 100 migrants near the San Ysidro port throwing rocks and bottles at border agents. November 2013, the agents responded by shooting pepper balls into the crowd and forcing them back into Mexico. And by the way, Mary Beth Caston, a Border Patrol spokesperson at the time, said that a lone agent used pepper balls to defend himself when he was confronted by the large group. As the group advanced on the border, agents used other intermediate use of force devices to stop them. There's more hypocrisy. Now, the president said he'll close the border if he needs to. He's going to do it, you know, as often as he needs to. It's been reopened, at least for the time being. It, we now hear from all sides, the Mexican side, the American side, that most of the people coming are men, in spite of the media trying to say it's all about women and children. It is not. And that's been the talking point all over the media. And, you know, you have one top Senate Democrat saying this is, you know, we need a path to citizenship for all these people. Senator Klobuchar saying to George Stephanopoulos. By the way, then you have the horrific comparison of Ocasio-Cortez comparing migrants to Holocaust victims. And Lindsey Graham tweeted back, I recommend maybe you take a tour of the Holocaust Museum and you might better understand the differences between the Holocaust and the caravan. And they are massive. But it's the largest attempted rush of our border that we've ever seen in our lifetime. That's the dangerous part of it.
Decompressing on a teeter inversion table for a few minutes a day is a great addition to anyone's daily routine to maintain a healthy spine and active lifestyle. And if you have back pain, you need a teeter to invert every day. Over 3 million people have put their trust in Teeter. They've been the best known name in inversion tables since 1981. And for a limited time, get Teeter's brand new 2019 upgraded model of the inversion table, the Teeter Fit Spine, with bonus accessories, stretch max handles, and easy reach ankle system, plus a free vibration cushion for the ultimate muscle relaxation. Teeter inversion tables have thousands of reviews on Amazon. They're rated at 4.6 stars. And with this deal, you'll get $150 off when you go to teeter.com/USA. Get the new 2019 Teeter Fit Spine Inversion Table, plus a free vibration cushion, free shipping, free returns, and a 60-day money-back guarantee at teeter.com/USA. That's TEETER.com/USA.
All right, so here you have the rush of the border this weekend. You have all of these Border Patrol chiefs saying the same thing. Our agents are being assaulted. Large group rushing the area, throwing rocks, bottles at my men and women, putting them in harm's way. Another agent, San Diego sector. The group immediately started throwing rocks, debris at our agents, taunting the agents. Once agents were assaulted and numbers started growing, we had two or three agents at a time facing hundreds of people at a time. They had to deploy tear gas to protect themselves and protect the border. Now, if you watch fake news, CNN, this is how they portrayed it. Listen.
His claim was that most of the people storming the fence were men, not the women and children that we've seen in the pictures.
Look, there are no easy answers here, and it's a very difficult situation, a very complicated situation. I don't find that a compelling answer. We have seen the images of the children and the women, and there has got to be a pragmatic and compassionate answer here that does not involve tear gassing children. That is not who America is. That is not what we do. The eyes of the world are watching us, and if we are going to be the beacon of human rights for the world, we can't have these images coming out from our country.
If he tries to shut down the government, I don't think that will be a popular move over this wall. The wall is unpopular. I mean, yes, his base likes the wall. But other than that, shutting down the government over this wall, I don't see why that is something Democrats should fear, because most people don't want the wall. And as this incident illustrates, the wall wouldn't make any difference.
Yeah, it would if it was a properly built wall. It would. I mean, but it's not mostly women and children. It's just a talking point myth and lie. The vast majority of people that are in the caravan are men. And when you watch our agents being assaulted with rocks and bottles, what other option do they have? If they're going to rush the border, you know, it's what are you then to do? You know, if they were asylum seekers, one of the Border Patrol agent spokesmen said they'd surrender. They wouldn't hit us with rocks. But then you've got Holocaust comparisons, and it gets worse from there, which, by the way, is pretty much the prediction I made, that the left is going to lose it and overreach. All right, 25 till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN. If you want to be a part of the program, the top story of the day, and there's a lot of other stuff to get to, but obviously the now growing population, migrants, caravan, Tijuana, Mexico, the problems that they in their city are having, even their mayor saying it's an invasion and Trump was right and angry with the larger, more national government of Mexico not doing their job. We have our agents being assaulted yesterday as there was a rush for the border and a large group rushed the area. This is Border Patrol Chief Carla Provost, and they were throwing rocks and bottles at my men and women and putting them in harm's way. You know, I'm watching the reaction of the left, and somehow they've convinced themselves that the American people are with them on this. I think Americans, by and large, not just the president's base, you know, we pay, according to a report that came out about 3 weeks ago, about $70,000 a year for every illegal immigrant when you add up the cost of on our healthcare system, our educational system, our criminal justice system. It is a massive cost to the American people. Never mind the incidences where there are violent infiltrators that cross the border, or those that bring drugs, or those involved in human trafficking. Not saying it's the vast number of people in the caravan, but we do have Mexican officials and our own DHS identifying at least 500 criminal elements that have infiltrated and merged into the caravan so as to take advantage of the large group that's trying to get into the country. And, you know, 42 migrants crossed the borders. They were arrested. Then they're rushing the border. Now when thousands more come and there's some type of showdown there, what do we do then? What does the average American want to have happen? Do they want their laws respected, their sovereignty respected? Are they fine with just come on in, open borders, no vetting, no background checks, doesn't matter, economic implications, nothing matters. I don't think that's where the American people are. You know, the funniest thing was watching Maxine Waters this weekend. This border chaos is a political ploy by Donald Trump. Well, Donald Trump didn't invite, they told him in the beginning to head home. We're not going to let you in. Or, you know, CNN saying that the wall wouldn't make any difference. Sure would. It's already making a difference. Or conspiracy TV, MSNBC, suggesting that Trump is trying to foment border violence. Nobody wants border violence, nor do we want the confrontation. But we saw it in southern Mexico. And anybody that discussed it was accused of, you know, ginning up racial hatred before an election. No, we saw a potential problem because if what happened in South Mexico happens here, that's a problem. And if we enforce the laws as our government is telling us that they will do, then it's going to get difficult. You know, Secretary Nielsen, DHS, on the San Ysidro Port of Entry closure said this morning, Border Patrol is forced to close the San Ysidro Port of Entry to ensure public safety in response to large numbers of migrants seeking to enter the U.S. illegally after being prevented from entering the port of entry. Some of these migrants attempted to breach legacy fence infrastructure along the border and sought to harm Border Patrol personnel by throwing projectiles at them. As I have continually stated, the Department of Homeland Security will not tolerate this type of lawlessness and will not hesitate to shut down ports of entry for security and public safety reasons. And then it goes on, we'll also seek to prosecute to the fullest extent of the law anyone who destroys federal property, endangers our frontline operators, and violates our nation's sovereignty. And Border Patrol, along with DHS law enforcement, federal law enforcement, U.S. military, state, local law enforcement, continue to have a robust presence along the southwest border at our ports of entry to prevent illegal entry or violence. And they're staying in close contact. Well, Mexico caused this problem. I mean, let's be real. I mean, they had every opportunity to fix this and they didn't. I watched 60 Minutes last. It was almost as if we've shown images. The separation family issue was an issue in the Obama years, but of course, Trump does it, even though he's fixed it with an executive order that I don't even believe will hold up in court. But he did it, you know, basically because he thought it was the right thing to do. But we'll see how that ends up in the days and weeks and months ahead. You know, it's pretty dangerous times out there. I got to tell you, you want to be a Border Patrol agent today, knowing that there are thousands more coming and what can potentially happen? If you're seeking asylum, why are you throwing bottles and rocks at agents that are just doing their job? And the idea that everyone gets asylum, we know what happens once they get asylum. All right, on to a couple of other things. We have an election tomorrow in Mississippi. This will be the final Senate seat. One more wrapping up. This is an important race. Obviously, numbers matter. And it's either going to be 53-47, 53 Republicans, 47 Democrats. If the Republican wins in this runoff tomorrow, or it's not. I mean, we literally have, it's a choice between, frankly, it's like Schumer versus Trump. In the sense, that's what the choice is for the people of Mississippi. Because Mike Espy is going to support Chuck Schumer. Mike Espy is a liberal. Mike Espy, by the way, a lot has come out with about him in the last few days. I know the media just focuses in on whatever they can say negatively about any Republican, but you know, Fox News reported that Espy, you know, is under fire for work for a company that had to pay $2.5 million to settle a bribery case. The Free Beacon had a great piece. Espy paid off $267,000 in tax debt shortly after lobbying for a desperate in the Ivory Coast. The Daily Caller pointed out that Espy literally is trailed by all these ethical questions and denied employees promotion because of a child's pre-existing condition. If it was a Republican, forget it. Anyway, so we'll watch this very closely. Obviously, it's an important race. And for her part, Hyde Smith is in the lead. But the problem is, you know, you never know in these special elections. You have one in December 4th in Georgia. I think it's for Secretary of State of Georgia. That one we'll pay attention to as well. But as everything kind of wraps up, end of the day, we don't know the final number. What is it, like 39 seats lost in the House? And this, if assuming Mississippi, hopefully, if everyone gets out to vote there tomorrow, that would be a gain plus two in the Senate for the president. Now, you listen to the media, they would think this is outrageous. This is a blowout midterm. It was not. It was not a blue wave. This is the predictable pattern that happens in every midterm, with a notable exception. While the president couldn't go out and campaign for 435 members of the House, he did go out and help Marsha Blackburn in Tennessee. I don't think Rick Scott or Ron DeSantis win Florida without the president's help. Certainly the president helped defeat incumbent Claire McCaskill, supporting Josh Hawley. Certainly Donnelly's defeat in Indiana by Braun was aided and assisted with the president's appearance. Heidi Heitkamp, you know, president was out there a number of times. Tester got into the fight of his life. That could have been won. And maybe the two downside, I, for the life of me, don't understand Arizona, where the governor of Arizona won by 350,000 votes. And, you know, a week later, we have to change the voting laws in this country. There's got to be a better system and a better way than what Arizona, Broward, and Palm Beach give us every 2 and 4 years. There's got to be a better way. And it's got to be universal. I certainly want to respect states' options for choosing and to accommodate people with absentee ballots. Early voting is like never-ending voting. It goes on forever in some states. And I think it lends itself to a lot more potential for corruption. And that's something that bothers me. On the 2020 watch, we're going to be following this. This is going to be a great year, 2019, because it's going to be a who's who of who can out-socialize, be the bigger socialist to get the Democratic Party support. Now, Hillary wants to run. She's got one big problem. There was an Investor's Business Daily article, and, you know, if there was ever any doubt that Hillary was selling State Department favors to the highest bidder, there's going to be some big news coming out about this. So my little birdie friend sources tell me that the plunge in Clinton Foundation donations since her loss in 2016 tells you pretty much everything you need to know because, oh, she's out of power. Why would we give to her? Pretty interesting. All the talk about Saudi Arabia, nobody questioned how much money, millions from states like Saudi Arabia, countries like Saudi Arabia that have donated millions and millions to the Clintons, and they got something in return. Hillary was not an outspoken critic like we've been on this program of Saudi Arabia's abuse of women and gays and lesbians and Christians and Jews. She was not an outspoken critic because they basically bought her silence as she accepted millions and millions of dollars from countries that practice Sharia, like Saudi Arabia. Anyway, some donation contributions, the Clinton Foundation plunged since her re-election. But why did it plunge so much? From $216 million to the Clinton Foundation in 2016 to just $26.5 million in 2017. An 88% reduction. Because the people that were donating were hoping if she ever became president, they were buying access. That's how it's so obvious what they do. Then Bernie Sanders, apparently he might want to jump into the race for 2020. Apparently was on The View, said, I'd be honest with you and, you know, I'm not thinking of running. He said, there are a lot of great candidates out there, many personal friends of mine, but I think what is most important right now is that Trump be defeated, his hateful rhetoric, divisiveness end, and that we as a nation come together respectfully. It's not what they want. I mean, we're going to go right back to the failed policies of Obama. That's what they want. That's what they stick to, although they never say it. You're going to see, now that the Democrats have control of the House, I am telling you, just sit back and watch the entertainment. Because this party has lost any sense of moderation, any sense of governance and solutions and service to the American people. It is going to be a 24/7, every second, minute, hour of every day, onslaught of nothing but hysteria and Trump hate. And the American people are going to discover something pretty quickly. They are not there to make the lives of the American people better. They're not offering solutions to the problems we could be solving if they wanted to work together. You know, I can tell you, Bill Clinton, to his credit, and I've been a strong Clinton critic, when he lost, 52 House seats in his first midterm and 8 Senate seats, compare that to Donald Trump. It's like Obama lost 6 Senate seats and 63 House seats. So, you know, net loss 60, you know, Trump's is net loss 35 and, you know, net loss 60 for Obama. 69 for Obama, 60 for Clinton. And Trump is half that, a little more than half that. I mean, that's the difference. And he picked up Senate seats. Let's see what happens in Mississippi. But I'm telling you, this is what they're going to do. I'm going to get into this. You know, I was glad that Chuck Grassley took on John Roberts, who attacked the president. President's right when he says there are Obama judges, Clinton judges, Bush judges, and Trump judges. Every president has a judicial philosophy and looks for people that support that judicial philosophy. Liberals want justices that are activists, that believe in legislating from the bench, and will even cite foreign law as a means of justifying whatever decisions they make. They're not relying on the Constitution, which is, you know, the great Antonin Scalia. I mean, in numerous cases when this happened, I mean, where they reference, literally are referencing foreign law. You know, he actually said the plurality's reliance upon Amnesty International's account of what it pronounces to be civilized standards, it's a death penalty for young offenders case, indecency in other countries, is totally inappropriate as a means of establishing the fundamental beliefs of this nation. And we can't forget that it is a constitution of the U.S. that we are expounding. The practices of other nations, particularly other democracies, can be relevant to determining whether a practice uniform among people is not merely a historical accident, but rather so implicit in the concept of ordered liberty that it occupies a place not merely in mores, but text permitting, in our Constitution as well. Something that a lot of people have long forgotten. By the way, Joe DeGeneva will weigh in on this when we get back. Also, we have Bossy and Corey Lewandowski coming up, and we'll talk to some people on the front lines of what happened this week and at the border. All right, glad you're with us. Hour 2, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program. By the way, Corey Lewandowski, Dave Bossy, join us at the bottom of this hour. You know, one of the things that really was shocking when I was away is, you know, comments by the top guy of the Supreme Court. And that is, of course, Chief Justice John Roberts, chastising the president for his, frankly, quite accurate criticism of the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. How many times have I said, oftentimes you'll see lawsuits and they'll go specifically to the Ninth Circuit, knowing that they have a left-wing bias. Doesn't matter that they get overturned about 80% of the time. That's irrelevant to them. And he's trying to make the case that the court is immune from any type of politics. It just is not true. And when the president talked about, well, Trump judges or justices versus Obama justices and judges, we've learned an awful lot over the years about how this whole process has been politicized. And, you know, for a chief justice to offer this public criticism of the president because of the president saying that an Obama judge blocked his effort to deny asylum is crossed a line that I've never seen crossed before. And the more amazing part of this is in, and Charles Grassley said this, is that the Chief Justice never once said a word about Obama. Remember Obama during the State of the Union address in 2010 criticized the court right there in front of them and took them on right there in front of them. And what he said, it was Sam Alito to say, not true. He literally mouthed the words, not true, as Obama gave his take on the ruling in the Citizens United case. And when six of the nine justices are sitting silently in the House of Representatives, you know, and Obama saying their ruling will open up the floodgates for special interest, including foreign corporations, to spend without limit in our elections. It was Alito that said, not true. Now, the reality is, in a post-Bork, post-Clarence Thomas, post-Kavanaugh environment, and then you look at the justices, Elena Kagan, Sonia Sotomayor, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, any of these left-wing justices on the Supreme Court, they are predictable left-wing justices that even cite foreign law, as I mentioned earlier. Anyway, here to weigh in on it, Joe DeGeneva, former U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia, and of course, co-founder of the law firm DeGeneva & Tunsing, and he's outraged by it. I've read your piece. It was pretty biting, pretty hard-hitting. This is pretty unprecedented.
Well, I think the comments by the Chief Justice John Roberts were blatantly inappropriate, but more importantly, they were political. This had nothing to do with the law. He said there are no Obama judges, there are no Clinton judges, there are no Bush judges. That's nonsense. There are judges who are nominated by presidents that reflect their philosophy and their ideology. Sometimes it's to the left, sometimes it's to the right. Ask yourself this question. Why now? Why did John Roberts decide that he had to say something that was so inappropriate? And remember, during the Kavanaugh hearing...
Well, why do you think that is?
I think that he's become very political, just like he did when he ruled in favor of Obamacare, when all along he had been indicating to everyone in their conferences that he was going to vote against it. And in fact, his opinion, which was the majority opinion sustaining Obamacare, was actually written as a majority opinion to overturn Obamacare. And at the last minute, he decided to throw a sop to everybody by ruling that the legislation violated the Commerce Clause, but it didn't matter because it was a tax. Even though Obama's own Justice Department and Solicitor General were arguing till they were red in the face that it was not a tax. And you know why they were arguing that? Because it didn't originate in the House of Representatives, which has to originate all tax bills. I think Roberts has sold out, and I think he realizes he made a terrible mistake.
Why do you think
mistake.
He realizes it? I haven't seen anything on his side that recognizes such.
Well,
and again, by the way, it wasn't just in 2010 when Obama went directly at Supreme Court justices. He did it after the case that I mentioned, and this was during the Citizens United case. And then in 2012, right, there were oral arguments, if you remember, in the Obamacare case, NFIB v. Sebelius, and that appeared to go against the administration. Obama very publicly warned the Supreme Court against overturning the law, attacking the very right. idea of an unelected group of people overturning a duly constituted and passed law.
Absolutely. And he did that. And you know what else he did? First of all, you're absolutely right. He went directly in the face of the Supreme Court, warning them not to overturn. It was a political threat done by Obama. But also, Roberts didn't say a word when John Paul Stevens, the retired justice, said that Kavanaugh does not belong on the court. Roberts didn't say a word, even after Kavanaugh got on the court. No, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg, her comments about President Trump, that he was a faker, that he didn't know what he was doing, that he didn't have a brain. Nothing from the Chief Justice about that. I think Roberts has become a Democrat. I think the problem for him is he the reason you haven't heard say anything further is he got whacked and he didn't like it.
Well, whacked by the president. I mean, whacked by public opinion, because, you know, what's really frustrating to me is all the times that we have cases, Lawrence v. Texas, a case, you know, where foreign law is cited. Thomas v. Oklahoma, another case. Roper versus right. Simmons, another case. Cases where literally, in that case, Justice Kennedy noting, and it had to do with capital punishment on someone under the age of 18, and whether it's unconstitutional. And Kennedy goes on to say that the U.S. and Somalia, you know, there are only seven other countries besides the U.S. that executed juvenile offenders, as if that matters. And a stinging rebuke in the dissent by Scalia. And he claimed evolving standards of decency do not have as strong a consensus as the majority claimed, as only 18 of 38 states. And then he went on to lecture them about we have a constitution in this country, and our constitution should be dictating such guidelines and in this case, rulings.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I think when I say he got whacked by Grassley. He got whacked by a lot of senators and congressmen. He got whacked by me, Sean. That's worth something.
No, and it's worth a lot.
He got whacked by a lot of people. But one of the good things is he has now shut up. And I dare say you will see little from him. But let's be very
well. But
clear.
If you're and right, do we now expect him to vote with Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the court and Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan?
No, because he made his stand on Obamacare. That was going to be his legacy if he overruled it, and so he decided he would give the president a sop. I don't think he's going to do that ever again in a big case. I just don't think he can afford to do it from a jurisprudential standpoint. His decision, by the way, in Obamacare was the laughingstock of the legal community. I mean, the comments on it were quite embarrassing for him. That's why.
But if you think he's become a Democrat, what would make you think he would not rule more liberally than perhaps he has in the past?
Well, let me just say, I think he became a Democrat for the moment. I think he decided that he had to stand up to the president. He made a terrible mistake for the court. He embarrassed the court. He embarrassed himself. And I think he may have learned an important lesson.
What did you think this weekend, Alan Dershowitz's comments about the Mueller report will be devastating politically to the president? Because I don't believe that's the case, because I don't believe they have anything.
Well, I expect Mueller to publish a completely unfair report, completely alienated from the true facts in the case. There will be no evidence of any collusion by the president or anyone else in the Trump campaign. And I think that I have no idea what Alan Dershowitz was talking about. Alan's a lovely man. He's probably trying to figure out a way to get lunch engagements back up in Martha's Vineyard after having been such a defender of the president. Maybe that's why he said it. I found the comments rather stupid.
Well, I just don't think there's any there, but I think I agree with you. I think Mueller's going to look at the team that he's appointed, which has been a part of the biggest criticism that I have. It seems that the only thing they're fixated and focused on now is apparently, according to The Hill and some other news sources, they're going after Jerome Corsi. And again, it appears to be they wanted him to make a plea deal and admit to lying under oath to either a grand jury or to Mueller's team. And again, we get back to this point. You can't get somebody for the underlying crime, but you're going to bring up a perjury charge and create a perjury trap for people. And I am of the belief if you can't get somebody on the underlying issue, you know, people don't remember things perfectly. And it just discourages anybody from ever talking to anybody.
Well, as I tell all of our clients, when the feds come, take the fifth. Make them give you immunity. Take the fifth. Jerry Corsi never should have talked to them, especially people like Mueller's people who are clearly people engaged in a vendetta against the president of the United States. They have not acted in good faith from the beginning of the investigation. They realized they couldn't subpoena the president, so they accepted written answers from him and his really fine lawyers, Rudy Giuliani and Jay Sekulow. I mean, two really great lawyers. So I give a tremendous amount of credit to Rudy and Jay and the other people they've been working with for crafting a brilliant legal strategy. And for all the criticism that Rudy took when he was doing a lot of public appearances, he's a very sagacious man. He had a plan, and it worked.
Well, I think, you know, certainly it was a victory. The president was never going to go in person. I guess we could have had a big showdown and a public fight if they wanted to subpoena the president and that he had to go answer questions, ultimately probably headed to the Supreme Court itself. And maybe they even calculated with Justice Kavanaugh on there that they didn't have the votes on the Supreme Court to ever win that case. Although maybe now with John Roberts, who knows, but...
President won. All I care about is the president won a great victory by having only to answer questions. And he did that out of grace because it involved conduct before he was president, so he didn't have an Article II objection. But I think a great victory for the president in light of this outrageous investigation, which has no legal basis at all.
How do you think they justify when we know there was a bought and paid for dossier? We know that there was surveillance abuse, unmasking abuse, leaking of raw intelligence. We know that multiple fraud cases against FISA courts. They never did their due diligence. They never vetted. They never corroborated, never even investigated the claims in Hillary's dossier that we now ultimately find out that its author, Christopher Steele, denied himself when put under oath in Great Britain. But there was Russian lies disseminated to the American people. It was also, you know, with circular reporting leaked out to certain media outlets as part of a media leak strategy of Page and Strzok. And we know that it was part of an insurance policy to delegitimize and hurt a duly elected president. So how do you have an investigation and not go into this?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt, Sean, as a result of what you've outlined and what we've been talking about for almost 18 months. There was a brazen plot to exonerate Hillary Clinton and frame Donald Trump. And Robert Mueller, I'm very sad to say, having known Bob for more than 20 years, actually more than 30 years, that Mueller was a willing participant in this plot, and he has done everything he can to figure out a way to get the president of the United States. He was so close to James Comey. He was so close to Rod Rosenstein. They've all worked together. It's pretty obvious that Mueller was part of the coup. He remains a part of the coup. And in due course and in the course of history, everything that Mueller has done, which is a disgrace to federal law enforcement policy, not one investigation out of Bob Mueller of anything that Hillary did, anything that the FBI did. Sure, he gets rid of Strzok and Page, but he didn't make an announcement about it, did he? He never told anybody he had gotten rid of Strzok. And he cavorted with McCabe and all these people. Mueller's a smart guy. He knew exactly what he was doing. He was part of the plot. He's played a vital role. And Rod Rosenstein brought him into the plot and used him to do it. It's a disgrace. Mueller should be ashamed of himself.
Last question. So Mueller's going to, you know, come out with his report. Democrats have threatened that they're going to investigate pretty much anything and everything Trump. They have no agenda except to destroy him. So one investigation ends. This one gets picked up. And now we have, what, 2 more years of this?
Yes, and I think the president, in my opinion, will do the best thing he can. Resist every subpoena, refuse to comply, invoke executive privilege, make them go all the way to the Supreme Court on every subpoena. Do exactly what Obama did. Produce nothing. The difference is Obama lied about everything that he didn't want to give them. Trump has nothing to lie about, but the Democrats want to fight. They're going to get one.
But at some point, is there any governing for the American people? Is that what this party now represents? Just destroy Trump?
I don't think the Democrats represent anything more other than an effort to dethrone a duly elected president of the United States. When you look at what they've done since 2016 at the end of the election, how they created this false story, this false narrative about Russia, and then everything they did after that, the American people made a foolish decision when they put them in control of the House this past November, this past election day, and now they're going to pay a price for it because the Democrats will do nothing. They will fight. They will fraudulently make accusations. They will issue subpoenas. They will do nothing to help Americans. They will try to tear down the tax code. They will try to do everything they can to harm the president. They don't care one whit about the average voter. And the reason is very simple. They have become the party of the rich, the party of Wall Street, the party of the left, the party of nutso America. And they're perfectly happy to be there. And this president is going to win because he's got middle America on his side.
Well said. I don't think anybody said it better. Thank you, Joe DiGenova. Thanks for being with us. When we come back, Corey Lewandowski, Dave Bossy, Trump's enemies, how the deep state is undermining the presidency. That's next. Later, we'll get back to the border and all the violence that took place this weekend. A lot of the media not reporting it. We are. We've got all the details straight ahead.
Better be ready for the fact that he might be leading the Republican ticket
next. I know you don't believe that, but I want to go on to Matthew.
Sorry, I understand why so many people voted for him. I understand where you were coming from. I understand why you liked him. But this man is lying to you.
Donald Trump is a president with whom there is grave question about his fitness and ability to conduct the office of the president.
I'll say it again. This Russian connection just keeps building, and every time it builds and expands, you have have to wonder if Trump himself isn't worried about what's swirling around under the covers.
The entire world's watching, and of course, most importantly, Vladimir Putin's watching. It seemed like yesterday was his love note to Vladimir Putin.
It is certainly an unusual speech, a weird speech, Rocket Man insulting Kim Jong-un.
Yes! I have thought an awful lot about blowing up the White House.
Of course I want to punch him in the face.
Right.
16 tweets today to start the new year, some of them deeply disturbing. These are the messages from a person who is not well.
He said he's an excellent help. I mean, Sanjay Gupta came out and was like, so sure about excellent help.
President Trump is goading Kim Jong-un to test a nuclear missile again, to prove its reliability, to show him wrong.
The Stormy saga takes a dramatic turn as the porn star speaks out on her alleged affair with citizen Trump.
Stormy Daniels.
Stormy Daniels is lawyer.
We haven't heard from him about the Stormy Daniels affair.
Guess he's a holer.
Is there a difference if the president said holer? House. I want to read the definition of treason.
This was nothing short of treasonous.
The idea that the president would be revoking security clearance, not based on wrongdoing, just based on words, is shameful.
With any previous president, if you'd woken up to this all caps tweet threatening war with Iran, you'd think he probably belongs in a padded cell. But with Trump, this is kind of business as normal.
All right, 23 now till the top of the hour. Do you realize now for over 2 years, this is all you get? It's every second, every minute, every hour, every day. Just nonstop attacks. I think the president has governed pretty well, as evidenced by the economic results, the results with Kim Jong-un and everything in between. And it's just this they cannot. It's like a drug to them in the media, hating Donald Trump. The problem is, we have other people. I've always talked about four sources that Trump has to deal with. Number one, you've got deep state bureaucrats, which we've learned an awful lot about that have undermined the president even before he got into office. They didn't want him elected. Then, of course, you have Democrats, liberals that just melt like bubble and fizz like Alka-Seltzer in water anytime he even says anything. Then you've got the never-Trumper crowd, which they just want him gone more than anything to say, we were right, and weak Republicans that are frankly just useless. Anyway, how deep does this all run? Joining us now, Corey Lewandowski, Dave Bossi. They have a brand new bestseller out. It's called Trump's Enemies, How the Deep State is Undermining the Presidency. And by the way, it's on Amazon.com, Hannity.com, bookstores everywhere. And welcome both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Mr. Bossi, you actually said that there was a left-wing conspiracy to take down the president, and while saying that, you said there was a right-wing conspiracy that you agreed with Hillary Clinton when she made those comments back in the day. If there was a conspiracy, I don't know about it because I just did my own thing, and that is cover a pretty corrupt president.
That's exactly right, Sean. I wish I had been able to finish that sentence. But there were guys like you and guys like me, and there weren't very many of us, but we all were working to uncover what the Clinton administration were doing. There were seven independent counsels, the Whitewater investigation, the campaign finance investigation. There were plenty of people who went to prison in that administration. That was real corruption. The vast left-wing conspiracy, and I was trying to make the correlation that Hillary Clinton said there was a vast right-wing conspiracy. Well, we know that there is a vast left-wing conspiracy undermining this president, and it is the bureaucracy that exists in the government, the Obama holdovers who are still there, the intelligence services that have been corrupting him, whether it's the bad FBI agents. There are, you name it, whether it's Strzok, Page, Comey, McCabe, those guys are all gone now, and that's what we write about in this book, Trump's Enemies, is what the president has been up against, whether it's the mainstream media or congressional weaklings, as you put it.
But Corey, let me ask you, because part of the book, you actually, both you and Dave, interviewed the president, and the president told you in this interview that he thinks that Obama knew. In other words, if the shoe were on the other foot, he's quoted as saying, it would be treason and they'd, you know, be locked up for 100 years. I've spent a lot of time on both radio and TV chronicling the abuse of power, corruption scandal involving the deep state. We all know the names Comey, McCabe, Page, Strzok, and a host of other characters involved in this. What did the president say to you guys about it?
Well, this is really probably one of the most explosive things in the book. And so when you pick up the book, we actually print the interview that we did with the president. It's the only time he sat for an interview for a book in the first 2 years, and I asked him, do you think Barack Obama knew of the insurance policy that McCabe and Strzok and Page and Comey and all these guys had on you, or do you think he just had no idea what was going on? And he goes on to say, yes, I think Barack Obama knew, and he said, and if the shoe were on the other foot, if someone had done this to Barack Obama, it would be called treason, and they'd be in jail for 100 years. And that is such a true statement, because we also know, Sean, and our sources are telling us, that there is a series of emails out there of people who attended meetings in the government at the highest levels of the government, and one name and one name only continuously gets redacted of participating in those meetings, and that name we believe to be Barack Obama. So he knew about the insurance policy. He knew that they were spying on American citizens on domestic soil. He knew that they were abusing the Pfizer application, and he clearly did nothing about it. And if Donald Trump hadn't gotten elected, none of us would know anything about this.
Well, I mean, do we ever get that information? Do we ever get those emails?
Well, we need the president to declassify this stuff. So, Sean, you've been on this for a long time. Others have. The president needs to declassify.
Why hasn't he?
Application documents.
We've all agreed, people like you and me and Dave and you know, people like Greg Jarrett, Sarah Carter, John Solomon, all of us that have really done this deep dive into the deep state, we all say the same thing. You know, we should have the unredacted FISA memo, the 302s with Steele and Bruce Orr, that is, and we should have the Gang of Eight materials, and that these emails would be on top of that. That would be another batch of information.
Well, you're exactly right, and we hope that the president does that. We asked him when he was going to do that. We asked him in the interview if he was going to do it. And if you remember, Sean, look, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. He actually ordered the declassification of the documents, and within 24 hours, those bureaucrats around him, the deep state around him, convinced him to let the IG handle this in his own way and to come up with the information. That has now been, you know, 8 weeks ago, and we still don't have it. There are people who surround this president who don't have his best interests in mind and don't have the country's best interests in mind.
Dave Bossi, why are they still there if they surround the president?
Well, Sean, you know, the three of us, we wish that the president would understand which ones are good for him and which ones aren't. But he has recognized, if you look at Rex Tillerson, you look at Gary Cohen, you look at some of these other actors that were in the administration that are no longer there, he has made changes. And we wish he would make some more. But look, we want this information out there. The American people deserve it. The Mueller investigation is based on a fraud. And when the Mueller investigation ends, that report, the American people need to see it in its entirety. And I hope that that's the case, because after 2 years and tens of millions of dollars of taxpayer dollars being spent on this ridiculous charade of an investigation where there's been not one scintilla of evidence about collusion or cooperation with the Russians, because there wasn't any, this president beat Hillary Clinton. She ran a terrible campaign. She was a terrible candidate. And the American people voted for Donald Trump.
But the great irony is everything we've discovered, and that, yeah, there actually was Russian interference, and it was bought and paid for by Hillary.
Right.
More importantly, we learned about surveillance abuse, unmasking abuse, leaking intelligence, like in the case of General Flynn. We never got to the bottom of all of that. We have FISA court fraud at a high level. They never did the verification. They never corroborated Hillary's bought and paid for Russian lies. That actually high-ranking government officials disseminated that information before the election and then used it to bludgeon Trump as, quote, part of a media leak strategy and an insurance policy. That's all now irrefutable at this point.
And the president, in our interview that we conducted with him, that is in our book, Trump's Enemies.
And it's a 45-minute interview. This is a long interview.
It is a long, wide-ranging interview, but he talks about how he believes that Barack Obama knew, in the president's words, he knew about us, the campaign, being spied on. He recognizes that the bad FBI agents, the Strzok and Pages of the world and the McCabes, were using leaks of information that they had, giving it to reporters, then using those articles that the reporters would print to go to the FISA court, to go and use as investigative.
By the way, knowing it's one source, the one source was Christopher Steele, who in an interrogatory in Great Britain, he wouldn't even back up his own dossier.
Exactly right, Sean. This is a dangerous game that Comey and others were playing, and they were trying to delegitimize from the beginning that the president was elected. And that is 60-plus million Americans voted for Donald Trump, and one man, James Comey, tried to overturn that.
Let me go. There's a lot that has been brought up. I know you guys were on some of the Sunday shows this weekend, and Corey, the issue of you and General Kelly and an altercation you had, I just want to hear it in your own words. What happened?
You know, Sean, I don't want to get into what may or may not have happened, but I'll tell you this. John Kelly and I have had very candid conversations when I don't think the president is being served well by his team. I'm a person who is going to speak his mind, and I think the president deserves that. And so I've told John Kelly, going back over a year, that I was concerned that the political operation in the White House wasn't what it should have been. We've now seen some of those results come to fruition with the midterm elections, and I continue to worry that some people in that building that are supposed to be working for the president are working to undermine him. And I'm the type of person who's going to tell him that, and I'm going to tell the president that if asked. And so I know that bothers some people sometimes, but look, I think it's my obligation and my duty to be fair and honest, and I don't want a job in the building. I don't want to go work for the government. I love doing what I'm doing. So I'm going to give my best advice and counsel to the president and to his senior leadership team every chance I can.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. The book is called Trump's Enemies, How the Deep State is Undermining the Presidency. Corey Lewandowski, Dave Bossi on the other side. Also, News Roundup, Information Overload Hour. We'll have the latest on all of the violence over the weekend that took place at the border. And the president goes to Mississippi. One last Senate race, really important. They go to the polls tomorrow, and he has two stops in Mississippi today. Right, as we continue, Corey Lewandowski, Dave Bossi are with us to talk about their new book, Trump's Enemies, How the Deep State is Undermining the Presidency, in bookstores everywhere, Hannity.com, Amazon.com, wherever you shop for your books. One of the things I like a lot about the book is you both know the president well. Both of you have had ongoing relationships with the president. We've all followed this. It looks like the Mueller issue is going to come to an end, just as now the House is taken over by Pelosi and Maxine Waters and Gerald Nadler and Adam Schiff. What advice do you give the president, Dave, in terms of these guys? How do you deal with it?
Well, you know, I think having a lot of experience, as you know, Sean, I was the chief investigator in the House during the Clinton years. This needs to be taken very seriously. The House Democrats, I believe, will overplay their hands. They'll do too much. But that doesn't mean that this White House doesn't need to be prepared. And Pat Cipollone, the new incoming White House counsel, needs to be 100% prepared. He needs to build a team of lawyers and communication experts. Okay, so you remember back in the Clinton years, it was Mark Fabiani and Chris Lahane. Those guys were the lawyers, the communication experts and lawyers for the Clinton White House. And you have to go to battle stations. You have to take it very seriously, because whether it's Mueller or the Democrat-controlled House, subpoenas and depositions can truly.
It can paralyze if you're not.
It can paralyze.
You have to fight. I only have about 30 seconds. We'll give Corey the last word. Corey.
You know, Sean, the book, Trump's Enemies, it's a great read. It's Cyber Monday. People should go out and get it. And what they should understand, that if Donald Trump had not won this election, we would know nothing about the abuses that too many men and women at the highest levels of the FBI did on American citizens because they didn't agree with them politically. The American people are awake to it. And the other thing in this book, and Donald Trump talks about it, is the fake news. And he has pointed out how wrong the fake news has been so often. And it's one of his biggest accomplishments since he's been the president.
All right, Corey Lewandowski, Dave Bossi, their brand new book, Trump's Enemies, How the Deep State is Undermining the Presidency. Bookstores everywhere, Amazon.com, Hannity.com. Thank you both, and we'll be seeing you on TV this week, Corey and Dave. Thanks.
Thank you.
When we come back, we go back to the border and the hostility and the violence that took place over the weekend as we continue this Monday post-Thanksgiving. The news never stops, ever, not even for a minute. Straight ahead. All right, glad you're with us. Hour 2, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program. By the way, Corey Lewandowski, Dave Bossi, join us at the bottom of this hour. You know, one of the things that really was shocking when I was away is, you know, comments by this, the literally the top guy of the Supreme Court. And that is, of course, Chief Justice John Roberts chastising the president for his, frankly, quite accurate criticism of the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. How many times have I said, oftentimes you'll see lawsuits and they'll go specifically to the Ninth Circuit, knowing that they have a left-wing bias. Doesn't matter that they get overturned about 80% of the time. That's irrelevant to them. And he's trying to make the case that the court is immune from any type of politics. It just is not true. And when the president talked about, well, Trump judges or justices versus Obama justices and judges, we've learned an awful lot over the years about how this whole process has been politicized. And, you know, for a chief justice to offer this public criticism of the president because of the president saying that an Obama judge blocked his effort to deny asylum is crossed a line that I've never seen crossed before. And the more amazing part of this is in, and Charles Grassley said this, is that the chief justice never once said a word about Obama. Remember, Obama, during the State of the Union address in 2010, criticized the court right there in front of them and took them on right there in front of them. And what he said, it was Sam Alito to say, not true. He literally mouthed the words, not true, as Obama gave his take on the ruling in the Citizens United case. And when six of the nine justices are sitting silently in the House of Representatives, you know, and Obama saying their ruling will open up the floodgates for special interest, including foreign corporations, to spend without limit in our elections. It was Alito that said, not true. Now, the reality is, in a post-Bork, post-Clarence Thomas, post-Kavanaugh environment, and then you look at the justices, Elena Kagan, Sonia Sotomayor, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, any of these left-wing justices on the Supreme Court, they are predictable left-wing justices that even cite foreign law, as I mentioned earlier. Anyway, here to weigh in on it, Joe DeGeneva, former U.S. attorney for the District of Columbia, and of course, co-founder of the law firm DeGeneva & Tunsing, and he's outraged by it. I read your piece. It was pretty biting, pretty hard-hitting. This is pretty unprecedented.
Well, I think the comments by the Chief Justice John Roberts were blatantly inappropriate. But more importantly, they were political. This had nothing to do with the law. He said there are no Obama judges, there are no Clinton judges, there are no Bush judges. That's nonsense. There are judges who are nominated by presidents that reflect their philosophy and their ideology. Sometimes it's to the left, sometimes it's to the right. Ask yourself this question. Why now? Why did John Roberts decide that he had to say something that was so inappropriate? And remember, during the Kavanaugh hearing...
Well, why do you think that is?
I think that he's become very political, just like he did when he ruled in favor of Obamacare, when all along he had been indicating to everyone in their conferences that he was going to vote against it. And in fact, his opinion, which was the majority opinion sustaining Obamacare, was actually written as a majority opinion to overturn Obamacare. And at the last minute, he decided to throw a sop to everybody by ruling that the legislation violated the Commerce Clause, but it didn't matter because it was a tax. Even though Obama's own Justice Department and Solicitor General were arguing till they were red in the face that it was not a tax. And you know why they were arguing that? Because it didn't originate in the House of Representatives, which has to originate all tax bills. I think Roberts has sold out, and I think he realizes he made a terrible
mistake.
Why
do you think he realizes it? I haven't seen anything on his side that recognizes such.
Well,
and by the way, it wasn't just in 2010 when Obama went directly at Supreme Court justices. He did it after the case that I mentioned, and this was during the Citizens United case. And then in 2012, right, there were oral arguments, if you remember, in the Obamacare case, NFIB v. Sebelius, and that appeared to go against the administration. Obama very publicly warned the Supreme Court against overturning the law, attacking the very idea of an unelected group of people overturning a duly constituted and passed law.
Absolutely. And he did that. And you know what else he did? First of all, you're absolutely right. He went directly in the face of the Supreme Court, warning them not to overturn. It was a political threat done by Obama. But also, Roberts didn't say a word when John Paul Stevens, the retired justice, said that Kavanaugh does not belong on the court. Roberts didn't say a word, even after Kavanaugh got on the court. No, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg, her comments about President Trump, that he was a faker, that he didn't know what he was doing, that he didn't have a brain. Nothing from the Chief Justice about that. I think Roberts has become a Democrat. I think the problem for him is the reason you haven't heard say anything further is he got whacked and he didn't like it.
Well, whacked by the president. I mean, whacked by public opinion, because, you know, what's really frustrating to me is all the times that we have cases, Lawrence v. Texas, a case, you know, where foreign law is cited. Thomas v. Oklahoma, another case. Roper versus right. Simmons, another case. Cases where literally, in that case, Justice Kennedy noting, and it had to do with capital punishment on someone under the age of 18, and whether it's unconstitutional. And Kennedy goes on to say that the U.S. and Somalia, you know, there are only seven other countries besides the U.S. that executed juvenile offenders, as if that matters. And a stinging rebuke in the dissent by Scalia. And he claimed evolving standards of decency do not have as strong a consensus as the majority claimed, as only 18 of 38 states. And then he went on to lecture them about, we have a constitution in this country, and our constitution should be dictating such guidelines and in this case, rulings.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I think when I say he got whacked by Grassley. He got whacked by a lot of senators and congressmen. He got whacked by me, Sean. That's worth something.
No,
and
it's worth a lot.
He got whacked by a lot of people, but one of the good things is he has now shut up, and I dare say you will see little from him. But let's be very
well.
Clear.
But if you're right, do we now expect him to vote with Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the court and Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan?
No, because he made his stand on Obamacare. That was going to be his legacy if he overruled it. And so he decided he would give the president a sop. I don't think he's going to do that ever again in a big case. I just don't think he can afford to do it from a jurisprudential standpoint. His decision, by the way, in Obamacare was the laughingstock of the legal community. I mean, the comments on it were quite embarrassing for him. That's why.
But if you think he's become a Democrat, what would make you think he would not rule more liberally than perhaps he has in the past?
Well, let me just say, I think he became a Democrat for the moment. I think he decided that he had to stand up to the president. He made a terrible mistake for the court. He embarrassed the court. He embarrassed himself. And I think he may have learned an important lesson.
What did you think this weekend, Alan Dershowitz's comments about the Mueller report will be devastating politically to the president? Because I don't believe that's the case, because I don't believe they have anything.
Well, I expect Mueller to publish a completely unfair report, completely alienated from the true facts in the case. There will be no evidence of any collusion by the president or anyone else in the Trump campaign. And I think that I have no idea what Alan Dershowitz was talking about. Alan's a lovely man. He's probably trying to figure out a way to get lunch engagements back up in Martha's Vineyard after having been such a defender of the president. Maybe that's why he said it. I found the comments rather stupid.
Well, I just don't think there's any there, but I think I agree with you. I think Mueller's going to look at the team that he's appointed, which has been a part of the biggest criticism that I have. It seems that the only thing they're fixated and focused on now is apparently, according to The Hill and some other news sources, they're going after Jerome Corsi. And again, it appears to be they wanted him to make a plea deal and admit to lying under oath to either a grand jury or to Mueller's team. And again, we get back to this point. You can't get somebody for the underlying crime, but you're going to bring up a perjury charge and create a perjury trap for people. And I am of the belief, if you can't get somebody on the underlying issue, you know, people don't remember things perfectly. And it just discourages anybody from ever talking to anybody.
Well, as I tell all of our clients, when the feds come, take the fifth. Make them give you immunity. Take the fifth. Jerry Corsi never should have talked to them, especially people like Mueller's people, who are clearly people engaged in a vendetta against the president of the United States. They have not acted in good faith from the beginning of the investigation. They realized they couldn't subpoena the president, so they accepted written answers from him and his really fine lawyers, Rudy Giuliani and Jay Sekulow. I mean, two really great lawyers. So I give a tremendous amount of credit to Rudy and Jay and the other people they've been working with for crafting a brilliant legal strategy. And for all the criticism that Rudy took when he was doing a lot of public appearances, he's a very sagacious man. He had a plan, and it worked.
Well, I think, you know, certainly it was a victory. The president was never going to go in person. I guess we could have had a big showdown and a public fight if they wanted to subpoena the president and that he had to go answer questions, ultimately probably headed to the Supreme Court itself. And maybe they even calculated with Justice Kavanaugh on there that they didn't have the votes on the Supreme Court to ever win that case. Although maybe now with John Roberts, who knows? But, you know,
well, the president won. All I care about is the president won a great victory by having only to answer questions. And he did that out of grace because it involved conduct before he was president. So he didn't have an Article II objection. But I think a great victory for the president in light of this outrageous investigation, which has no legal basis at all.
How do you think they justify when we know there was a bought and paid for dossier? We know that there was surveillance abuse, unmasking abuse, leaking of raw intelligence. We know that multiple fraud cases against FISA courts. They never did their due diligence. They never vetted. They never corroborated, never even investigated the claims in Hillary's dossier that we now ultimately find out that its author, Christopher Steele, denied himself when put under oath in Great Britain. But there was Russian lies disseminated to the American people. It was also, you know, with circular reporting leaked out to certain media outlets as part of a media leak strategy of Page and Strzok. And we know that it was part of an insurance policy to delegitimize and hurt a duly elected president. So how do you have an investigation and not go into this?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt, Sean, as a result of what you've outlined and what we've been talking about for almost 18 months. There was a brazen plot to exonerate Hillary Clinton and frame Donald Trump. And Robert Mueller, I'm very sad to say, having known Bob for more than 20 years, actually more than 30 years, that Mueller was a willing participant in this plot, and he has done everything he can to figure out a way to get the president of the United States. He was so close to James Comey. He was so close to Rod Rosenstein. They've all worked together. It's pretty obvious that Mueller was part of the coup. He remains a part of the coup. And in due course and in the course of history, everything that Mueller has done, which is a disgrace to federal law enforcement policy, not one investigation out of Bob Mueller of anything that Hillary did, anything that the FBI did. Sure, he gets rid of Strzok and Page, but he didn't make an announcement about it, did he? He never told anybody he had gotten rid of Strzok. And he cavorted with McCabe and all these people. Mueller's a smart guy. He knew exactly what he was doing. He was part of the plot. He's played a vital role. And Rod Rosenstein brought him into the plot and used him to do it. It's a disgrace. Mueller should be ashamed of himself.
All right, we got to take a break. We'll come back. We'll have more with Joe DiGenova on the other side. 800-941-SEAN is our toll-free telephone number. All right, as we continue with Joe DiGenova, 800-941-SEAN is our number. Corey Lewandowski, Dave Bossie talk about Trump's enemies and how the deep state is undermining the presidency at the bottom of this half hour. Last question. So Mueller's going to, you know, come out with his report. Democrats have threatened that they're going to investigate pretty much anything and everything Trump. They have no agenda except to destroy him. So one investigation ends. This one gets picked up. And now we have, what, 2 more years of this?
Yes. And I think the president, in my opinion, will do the best thing he can. Resist every subpoena, refuse to comply, invoke executive privilege, make them go all the way to the Supreme Court on every subpoena. Do exactly what Obama did. Produce nothing. The difference is Obama lied about everything that he didn't want to give them. Trump has nothing to lie about, but the Democrats want to fight. They're going to get one.
But at some point, is there any governing for the American people? Is that what this party now represents? Just destroy Trump?
I don't think the Democrats represent anything more other than an effort to dethrone a duly elected president of the United States. When you look at what they've done since 2016 at the end of the election, how they created this false story, this false narrative about Russia, and then everything they did after that, the American people made a foolish decision when they put them in control of the House this past November, this past election day, and now they're going to pay a price for it because the Democrats will do nothing. They will fight. They will fraudulently make accusations. They will issue subpoenas. They will do nothing to help Americans. They will try to tear down the tax code. They will try to do everything they can to harm the president. They don't care one whit about the average voter. And the reason is very simple. They have become the party of the rich, the party of Wall Street, the party of the left, the party of nutso America. And they're perfectly happy to be there. And this president is going to win because he's got middle America on his side.
Well said. I don't think anybody said it better. Thank you, Joe DiGenova. Thanks for being with us. When we come back, Corey Lewandowski, Dave Bossi, Trump's enemies, how the deep state is undermining the presidency. That's next. Later, we'll get back to the border and all the violence that took place this weekend. A lot of the media not reporting it. We are. We've got all the details straight ahead.
Better be ready for the fact that he might be leading the Republican ticket next.
I know you don't believe that, but I want to go on.
Sorry, I understand why so many people voted for him. I understand where you were coming from. I understand why you liked him. But this man is lying to you.
Donald Trump is a president with whom there is grave question about his fitness and ability to conduct the office of the president.
I'll say it again. This Russian connection just keeps building, and every time it builds and expands, you have to wonder if Trump himself isn't worried about what's swirling around under the covers.
The entire world's watching, and of course, most importantly, Vladimir Putin's watching. It seemed like yesterday was his love note to Vladimir Putin.
It is certainly an unusual speech, a weird speech, Rocket Man insulting Kim Jong-un.
Yes! I have thought an awful lot about blowing up the White House.
Of course I want to punch him in the face.
Right.
16 tweets today to start the new year. Some of them deeply disturbing. These are the messages from a person who is not well.
He said he's an excellent help. I mean, Sanjay Gupta came out and was like, so sure about excellent help.
President Trump is goading Kim Jong-un to test a nuclear missile again, to prove its reliability, to show him wrong.
The Stormy saga takes a dramatic turn as the porn star speaks out on her alleged affair with citizen Trump.
Stormy Daniels. Stormy Daniels' lawyer.
We haven't heard from him about the Stormy Daniels affair.
Guess he's a holer.
Is there a difference if the president said holer? House. I want to read the definition of treason.
This was nothing short of treasonous. The idea that the president would be revoking security clearance, not based on wrongdoing, just based on words, is shameful.
With any previous president, if you'd woken up to this all caps tweet threatening war with Iran, you'd think he probably belongs in a padded cell. But with Trump, this is kind of business as normal.
All right, 23 now till the top of the hour. Do you realize now for over 2 years, this is all you get? It's every second, every minute, every hour, every day. Just nonstop attacks. I think the president is governed pretty well, as evidenced by the economic results, the results with Kim Jong-un and everything in between. And it's just this they cannot. It's like a drug to them in the media, hating Donald Trump. The problem is, we have other people. I've always talked about four sources that Trump has to deal with. Number one, you've got deep state bureaucrats, which we've learned an awful lot about that have undermined the president even before he got into office. They didn't want him elected. Then, of course, you have Democrats, liberals that just melt like bubble and fizz like Alka-Seltzer in water anytime he even says anything. Then you've got the never-Trumper crowd, which they just want him gone more than anything to say, we were right, and weak Republicans that are frankly just useless. Anyway, how deep does this all run? Joining us now, Corey Lewandowski, Dave Bossi. They have a brand new bestseller out. It's called Trump's Enemies, How the Deep State is Undermining the Presidency. And by the way, it's on Amazon.com, Hannity.com, bookstores everywhere. And welcome both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Mr. Bossi, you actually said that there was a left-wing conspiracy to take down the president, and while saying that, you said there was a right-wing conspiracy that you agreed with Hillary Clinton when she made those comments back in the day. If there was a conspiracy, I don't know about it because I just did my own thing, and that is cover a pretty corrupt president.
That's exactly right, Sean. I wish I had been able to finish that sentence, but look, there were guys like you and guys like me
And there weren't very many of us, but we all were working to uncover what the Clinton administration were doing. There were seven independent counsels, the Whitewater investigation, the campaign finance investigation. There were plenty of people who went to prison in that administration. That was real corruption. The vast left-wing conspiracy, and I was trying to make the correlation that Hillary Clinton said there was a vast right-wing conspiracy. Well, we know that there is a vast left-wing conspiracy undermining this president, and it is the bureaucracy that exists in the government, the Obama holdovers who are still there, the intelligence services that have been corrupting him, whether it's the bad FBI agents. There are, you name it, whether it's Strzok, Page, Comey, McCabe, those guys are all gone now. And that's what we write about in this book, Trump's Enemies, is what the president has been up against, whether it's the mainstream media or congressional weaklings, as you put it.
But Corey, let me ask you, because part of the book, you actually, both you and Dave, interviewed the president, and the president told you in this interview that he thinks that Obama knew. In other words, if the shoe were on the other foot, he's quoted as saying, it would be treason and they'd, you know, be locked up for 100 years. I've spent a lot of time on both radio and TV chronicling the abuse of power, corruption scandal involving the deep state. We all know the names Comey, McCabe, Page, Strzok, and a host of other characters involved in this. What did the president say to you guys about it?
Well, this is really probably one of the most explosive things in the book. And so when you pick up the book, we actually print the interview that we did with the president. It's the only time he sat for an interview for a book in the first 2 years. And I asked him, do you think Barack Obama knew of the insurance policy that McCabe and Strzok and Page and Comey and all these guys had on you? Or do you think he just had no idea what was going on? And he goes on to say, yes, I think Barack Obama knew. And he said, and if the shoe were on the other foot, if someone had done this to Barack Obama, it would be called treason and they'd be in jail for 100 years. And that is such a true statement, because we also know, Sean, and our sources are telling us, that there is a series of emails out there of people who attended meetings in the government at the highest levels of the government, and one name and one name only continuously gets redacted of participating in those meetings. And that name we believe to be Barack Obama. So he knew about the insurance policy. He knew that they were spying on American citizens on domestic soil. He knew that they were abusing the Pfizer application, and he clearly did nothing about it. And if Donald Trump hadn't gotten elected, none of us would know anything about this.
Well, I mean, do we ever get that information? Do we ever get those emails?
Well, we need the president to declassify this stuff. So, Sean, you've been on this for a long time. Others have. The president needs to declassify.
Why hasn't he?
Application documents.
We've all agreed, people like you and me and Dave and you know, people like Greg Jarrett, Sarah Carter, John Solomon, all of us that have really done this deep dive into the deep state, we all say the same thing. You know, we should have the unredacted FISA memo, the 302s with Steele and Orr, Bruce Orr, that is, and we should have the Gang of Eight materials, and that these emails would be on top of that. That would be another batch of information.
Well, you're exactly right, and we hope that the president does that. We asked him when he was going to do that. We asked him in the interview if he was going to do it. And if you remember, Sean, look, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. He actually ordered the declassification of the documents, and within 24 hours, those bureaucrats around him, the deep state around him, convinced him to let the IG handle this in his own way and to come up with the information. That has now been, you know, 8 weeks ago, and we still don't have it. There are people who surround this president who don't have his best interests in mind and don't have the country's best interests in mind.
Dave Bossi, why are they still there if they surround the president?
Well, Sean, you know, the three of us, we wish that the president would understand which ones are good for him and which ones aren't. But he has recognized, if you look at Rex Tillerson, you look at Gary Cohen, you look at some of these other actors that were in the administration that are no longer there, he has made changes. And we wish he would make some more. But look, we want this information out there. The American people deserve it. The Mueller investigation is based on a fraud. And when the Mueller investigation ends, that report, the American people needs They need to see it in its entirety. And I hope that that's the case, because after 2 years and tens of millions of dollars of taxpayer dollars being spent on this ridiculous charade of an investigation where there's been not one scintilla of evidence about collusion or cooperation with the Russians, because there wasn't any, this president beat Hillary Clinton. She ran a terrible campaign. She was a terrible candidate. And the American people voted for Donald Trump.
But the great irony is everything we've discovered, and that, yeah, there actually was Russian interference, and it was bought and paid for by Hillary.
Right.
More importantly, we learned about surveillance abuse, unmasking abuse, leaking intelligence, like in the case of General Flynn. We never got to the bottom of all of that. We have FISA court fraud at a high level. They never did the verification. They never corroborated Hillary's bought and paid for Russian lies. That actually high-ranking government officials disseminated that information before the election and then used it to bludgeon Trump as, quote, part of a media leak strategy and an insurance policy. That's all now irrefutable at this point.
And the president, in our interview that we conducted with him, that is in our book, Trump's Enemies.
And it's a 45-minute interview. This is a long interview.
It is a long, wide-ranging interview, but he talks about how he believes that Barack Obama knew, in the president's words, he knew about us, the campaign, being spied on. He recognizes that the bad FBI agents, the Strzok and Pages of the world and the McCabes, were using leaks of information that they had, giving it to reporters, then using those articles that the reporters would print to go to the FISA court, to go and use as investigative.
By the way, knowing it's one source, the one source was Christopher Steele, who in an interrogatory in Great Britain, he wouldn't even back up his own dossier.
Exactly right, Sean. This is a dangerous game that Comey and others were playing, and they were trying to delegitimize from the beginning that the president was elected. And that is 60-plus million Americans voted for Donald Trump, and one man, James Comey, tried to overturn that.
Let me go. There's a lot that has been brought up. I know you guys were on some of the Sunday shows this weekend, and Corey, the issue of you and General Kelly and an altercation you had. I just want to hear it in your own words. What happened?
You know, Sean, I don't want to get into what may or may not have happened, but I'll tell you this. John Kelly and I have had very candid conversations when I don't think the president is being served well by his team. I'm a person who is going to speak his mind, and I think the president deserves that. And so I've told John Kelly, going back over a year, that I was concerned that the political operation in the White House wasn't what it should have been. We've now seen some of those results come to fruition with the midterm elections, and I continue to worry that some people in that building that are supposed to be working for the president are working to undermine him. And I'm the type of person who's going to tell him that, and I'm going to tell the president that if asked. And so I know that bothers some people sometimes, but look, I think it's my obligation and my duty to be fair and honest, and I don't want a job in the building. I don't want to go work for the government. I love doing what I'm doing. So I'm going to give my best advice and counsel to the president and to his senior leadership team every chance I can.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. The book is called Trump's Enemies, How the Deep State is Undermining the Presidency. Corey Lewandowski, Dave Bossi on the other side. Also, News Roundup, Information Overload Hour. We'll have the latest on all of the violence over the weekend that took place at the border. And the president goes to Mississippi. One last Senate race, really important. They go to the polls tomorrow, and he has two stops in Mississippi today. Right, as we continue, Corey Lewandowski, Dave Bossi are with us to talk about their new book, Trump's Enemies, How the Deep State is Undermining the Presidency, in bookstores everywhere, Hannity.com, Amazon.com, wherever you shop for your books. One of the things I like a lot about the book is you both know the president well. Both of you have had ongoing relationships with the president. We've all followed this. It looks like the Mueller issue is going to come to an end, just as now the House is taken over by Pelosi and Maxine Waters and Gerald Nadler and Adam Schiff. What advice do you give the president, Dave, in terms of these guys? How do you deal with it?
Well, you know, I think having a lot of experience, as you know, Sean, I was the chief investigator in the House during the Clinton years. This needs to be taken very seriously. The House Democrats, I believe, will overplay their hands. They'll do too much. But that doesn't mean that this White House doesn't need to be prepared. And Pat Cipollone, the new incoming White House counsel, needs to be 100% prepared. He needs to build a team of lawyers and communication experts. Okay, so you remember back in the Clinton years, it was Mark Fabiani and Chris Lahane. Those guys were the lawyers, the communication experts and lawyers for the Clinton White House. And you have to go to battle stations. You have to take it very seriously, because whether it's Mueller or the Democrat-controlled House, subpoenas and depositions can truly.
It can paralyze if you're not. You have to fight. I only have about 30 seconds. We'll give Corey the last word. Corey.
You know, Sean, the book, Trump's Enemies, it's a great read. It's Cyber Monday. People should go out and get it. And what they should understand, that if Donald Trump had not won this election, we would know nothing about the abuses that too many men and women at the highest levels of the FBI did on American citizens because they didn't agree with them politically. The American people are awake to it. And the other thing in this book, and Donald Trump talks about it, is the fake news. And he has pointed out how wrong the fake news has been so often. And it's one of his biggest accomplishments since he's been the president.
All right, Corey Lewandowski, Dave Bossi, their brand new book, Trump's Enemies, How the Deep State is Undermining the Presidency. Bookstores everywhere, Amazon.com, Hannity.com. Thank you both, and we'll be seeing you on TV this week, Corey and Dave. Thanks.